This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and it's normal time. It's not, you know, Saturday at 11 o'clock at night. It's Thursday. It's about 5:20. I am slightly later than I normally am, and this might be slightly shorter than normal, because I just had a very lovely dinner with my daughter and my wife and my granddaughter. My son-in-law is out in Louisville with some of the youth from his church, and my daughter's 30th birthday is today. And so my wife called me and she said, would you like to go to dinner with Lizzie and I? And I said, sure. So we just ran down to a local restaurant, had a very nice time, and this restaurant is actually a bit more difficult to actually get out of than my normal route home, so this may be a little interesting. If you hear, okay, that means that I didn't make it out like I was hoping. But anyways, been a good week. We have been working to finish up the problems that I would talk about last week that we had, but that seems to all be going fine. I'm probably about a half an hour out of handing off to them my portion of it and going just back in. We're just going to go back into a regular maintenance cycle with the code, and it's all gone fine. Been a little delayed on a few things, more than we thought we were going to be, but all in all, the website went up Sunday night, and as soon as we turned it on, you know, the orders started coming back in, and everything seemed to be stable. Had a few little glitches behind the scenes, but we're getting those taken care of, and so all in all, it's been fine. It's been a success. And we are back on track. So anyway, so that's good. The writing is going well. I obviously hadn't been able to do much of it last weekend because I was otherwise occupied, but I'm easing back into that now and warming up to that. And I'm just writing each piece a step at a time, and I'm getting close to where I think maybe the ending is going to be. I'm not really that many pages away now. So I'm already at about 110 pages. I don't expect it's going to go more than, this book is going to go more than 170, 180 pages. So that'll be good. It's kind of in the same scope as the other ones. I'm hearing back from beta readers, and that's all going well. I'm getting lots of good input from people. So all in all, everything is good. This week, I had one topic that I thought, ooh, I could talk about that. But it's a topic that is a bit controversial. So I'm gathering input from my friends as to whether or not they think it would be wise for me to talk about that topic. And I may talk about it next week. We'll see. It's one of those topics that people would really need to listen to the entire podcast, because it's surprising. It's a surprisingly visceral topic. I mean, when people start talking about this or considering it, it's visceral. And I'm always interested in those types of topics that evoke such emotion. Because, as you know, I believe that emotion actually has two sources. Emotion can be birthed in the spirit, or it can be birthed in the flesh. And I'm always trying to determine, is it being birthed in the spirit, and being birthed in the flesh? And if it's being birthed in the flesh, how is the flesh getting such traction with it? And so what can this teach us about life? Because the flesh is so well able to convince us of some lie that it can make immediate traction on things. And that's always fascinating to me. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to go ahead and do it tomorrow, because I'm never convinced that fear is a good reason not to do something. So I talked to a buddy about it just today, about this topic, and he said by covering that topic, you might, you know, be in a position that you might tarnish your reputation. And so it's very interesting. It's just very, very interesting. Anyways, a much safer topic today is a TED Talk that I watched. I love these TED Talks. I just think they're so interesting. I had a lovely breakfast with a friend this morning, and among other things that we talked about, I had mentioned a TED Talk that I had watched that was apropos to what we were discussing at the time. And it was called Dare to Disagree, I think was the name of the TED Talk. And it was just perfect for what he was wanting to explore in his business life. And so I just love watching these TED Talks because there's such a variety of topics, and it really gives me a lot to think about during the week. This week, I had watched one, and the name of it was Fighting with Nonviolence. And it was given by Scylla Elworthy, is her name, I think. Scylla Elworthy, Fighting with Nonviolence. You can watch it at TED.com. Really good talk. Trying to answer a question that I have pondered for years as well. Because without wanting to sound unpatriotic, there is a standard line and a standard approach that is taken to justify the involvement of our military around the world. Now, let me pause and say right at the beginning that I deeply appreciate the military. I deeply appreciate the dedication of the men and women in the military. And I certainly have not come to an end point in understanding the role of violence in the world and what is acceptable violence and what is not acceptable violence. I'm still struggling along. But I think it is an indisputable fact of life that the military exists, I think, as Rush Limbaugh would say, to break things and kill people. That is the purpose of the military, and to do it in the most efficient way possible. Having said that, and having been a person who has dedicated himself to a given framework in life, i.e. flesh versus spirit, and being dedicated to the proposition that flesh breeds flesh and spirit breeds spirit, I am forced to conclude that violence is not profitable. That then leads to what is the standard line in America, that freedom isn't free and that we owe our freedom to the fact that we have a military that is willing to go and kill people and break things. And for instance, I watch a movie like Act of Valor, it's called. And Act of Valor stars as its lead actors real Navy SEALs, and shows them going in and breaking things and killing people. And And it shows some of the effects that that violence has on their life, the isolation that it brings to them. And within my structure, isolation is a telltale sign of the flesh. That as the flesh works on us, it creates environments of isolation, as opposed to environments of community. Now, people would say, well, they do have a community because there's the camaraderie of their friends, but it brings of their fellow military, but it brings isolation between them and their families. So it has been something that I have pondered for some time, this question that was addressed in this TED Talk. And the question was simply this: how do we deal with violence and extreme violence without using force in return? How do we respond to violence without becoming thugs ourselves? The speaker, she gave a really wonderful story from her own childhood, how that when she was 13, she was glued to her parents' living room TV set, grainy black and white pictures as the Soviet tanks rolled into Budapest. And she saw young people no older than herself, approximately the same age, who were throwing themselves in front of these tanks and being mowed down. And she raced to her room, and she was packing a bag, and her mother came in and asked her what she was doing, and she said, "I'm going to Budapest." And her mother said, "What on earth for?" And she said, "Kids are getting killed there. There's something terrible happening." And her mother said, "Don't be silly." And she said, and then I started to cry, and my mother got it and said, "Okay, I see it's serious, but you're much too young to help. You need training. I'll help you. Just unpack your suitcase." And of course the crowd all laughed. And she said, in fact, her mother did help her get training. And then in her 20s, she went to work in Africa. To work in the conflicts in Africa. And she said over time, she learned that in fact, bullies use violence in three ways. And I thought this was very good. They use political violence to intimidate. They use physical violence to terrorize. Going to be a big sound as I make a left turn here. And they use mental or emotional violence to undermine. And in her opinion, only in rare cases does it work to use violence against violence. And so she has been working through the years to adopt some strategies, because she said nonviolence really does work. She gave the example of Nelson Mandela, who believed in violence, who was put in jail for decades, and when he came out of jail, he no longer believed in violence. He believed in nonviolence, and he and his cohorts were able to use the skills that they had to bring about a peaceful revolution in South Africa. And so this is a very interesting thing to me, because from the standpoint of the framework, there should be a way in the spirit to not be required to engage in what I would consider to be fleshly behavior and to create an environment of success. She gave some examples of people who are apparently able to do this. And she prefaced the first example by saying, these are the things that I have learned. I think she gave four things that I have learned. And she had interesting terms for them, and maybe I would use other terms for them. But they're, in essence, all things that derive out of an approach to life that leans towards spirit instead of flesh. The first one was self-knowledge. Know who you are. And she said you do that by meditation, by being exposed to conflict, by recognizing how you react in conflict. I would recharacterize this as simply growing strong so that you do not listen to the flesh as your, excuse me, as your first impulse. She gave the example of an activist in Burma whose name I am going to butcher, but I think her name is Aung San Suu Kyi, who I think I've seen that name quite a few places. She gave the example of this woman walking along with a group of student protesters, rounding a corner and coming face to face with a lot of young soldiers that had their machine guns pointed at them, ready to pull the triggers. And what she did, this activist did, was she first of all told her students to sit down so that they would not be in an aggressive pose, and then very calmly walked up to these young soldiers, whom she could see were trembling with their fingers on the triggers. She walked up to them very purposely and gently put her hand on the first barrel and lowered the barrel to the ground and went down the entire line of those soldiers and had each of them drop their weapons to the ground, and no one got killed that day. But that takes a technique, and it's the technique that I call go to quiet. That whenever there's a big burst of flesh, whenever there's a big burst of emotion that is obviously driven by destruction, that you need to go to quiet and listen very carefully and be very calm and methodical about the steps that you take next. She also talked, the speaker also talked about another technique that's very beneficial in dealing with nonviolence, and that is understanding your own fear and getting control of your own fear. She had an interesting little saying concerning fear. She said, I have a little mantra, and the mantra is this about fear. My fear grows fat on the energy I feed it, and if it grows very big, it probably happens. Well, when I heard that, I was like, yeah, that's absolutely, because flesh begets flesh, and spirit begets spirit. And she talked about a technique of talking to her fear and finding out what her fear wanted, which was a kind of an interesting way to put it, and it's somewhat similar to what I talk about, and that is to listen to what your fear is telling you and then say, okay, so that happens. Let's say that happens. Then what? Well, you're going to be disgraced. Okay, I'm disgraced. Then what? Jesus will still love me. The sun will come up tomorrow. I'll be disgraced, but life will go on. Well, you're going to die. Okay, well, maybe I die. Jesus will still love me. Life will go on for others. I'll go see Jesus. You know, that you face this thing that the fear is trying to tell you is the reason that you should be tied up in knots, is the reason that you should act radically. She also talked about anger, how that anger can be beneficial, but then she turned it and said, not anger at people, but anger at the situation. In other words, be energized by the fact that there is a lack of justice in the world, but don't be angry at the people. She was talking about how anger can be like gasoline, that when there is an emotional environment, when there are things happening, if you just respond in anger, it's just like spraying gasoline on the fire and it'll just ignite more. But if you can focus on the fact that what you're upset about is the situation and not people, that then you can have a much more effective response. And I thought something she said was very telling when she was talking about being angry. She said, it's okay to be angry with the thing, the nuclear weapons in this case. But it is hopeless to be angry with the people. They are human beings just like us. They are doing what they think is best. And that's the basis on which we can have a talk with them. And when I hear that phraseology, I think, ah, spirit. Because when she says they're human beings just like us, us is community. They and us being the same thing. Isolation and flesh says there's us and there's them, and we should be angry at them for daring to act like they're acting. I'm getting my mail. One moment. So that was number three. There was self-awareness, fear, getting your fear under control, understanding anger. And the fourth one was about community. And it was she said all over the world, what she sees in this century is there's a different kind of power. That the prior century was all about top-down power. And she said this century is all about grassroots power and being able to mobilize. And it's really true that a government can only function with the permission of the governed, at the good pleasure of the governed. I'm backing into my garage. Because the fact is that no government is powerful enough to suppress all the people all the time. And it's very interesting because there are situations around the world, like the situation in Syria, where there's discussion about us getting involved and us sending troops over there. But what's fascinating to me about this is that it could very well be that violence is not the solution at all. That the solution is nonviolence, peaceful protests, and perhaps nonviolent, peaceful protests where people are mowed down and killed. Because in those situations, I think what's going to happen is that at some point, there's going to be such a rejection in terms of world opinion and in terms of world expressions of the current regime that people will start defecting from the regime and it won't be able to function. And their own consciences will kick in as they begin to hear reports and see reports of people being mowed down and killed at, you know, the spirit within them will react, and eventually they'll say, okay, that's it. I can't be behind this anymore. And so then they will leave, and eventually no government can survive mass defections, because governments can only survive when there are minions that are willing to carry out their will. So I thought it was a very interesting talk, and she did mention a book that I'm going to need to get. It's a book by Gene Sharp. He's an 80-year-old man in Boston. He wrote a book called From Dictatorship to Democracy. And from what she says, it has 81 methodologies for nonviolent resistance. And she credits him with a lot of what's happening in the world in terms of dictatorships falling. She said, because when you read this book, you can see that people all over the world have read this book and they're putting into practice the principles that he's talking about, and they really do work. And she rattled off a list of countries. She said, you don't believe me? Have you asked yourselves how and why so many dictatorships have collapsed in the last 30 years. Czechoslovakia, East Germany, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Mali, Madagascar, Poland, the Philippines, Serbia, Slovenia. She said, I could go on now, Tunisia and Egypt. And so it sounds like a really interesting book. I am going to get the book probably, maybe not this week, but next week, after I finish the current book that I'm working on, which is an interesting book too. That book is called Why Is There Something Rather Than Nothing? I think that's the name of the book. Because I'd like to see what he has to say, because I'm very, very interested in this idea of nonviolence. And I think that according to my framework, there should very much be a place where nonviolence actually ends up creating a larger environment of success than violence does. And in fact, this lines up very nicely. I'm just gathering up my notes off of the floor where I've been custom. This lines up very nicely with Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Because what you see in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount is this principle of nonviolence. Someone strikes you on one cheek, turn the other cheek. If someone compels you to go 1 mile, go the second mile. If someone wants to take your coat, give him your cloak also. That you don't respond to evil with evil, but you respond to evil with good. And so I'm trying in my own life to evaluate all these things and to look and see what will be my chosen response to some of these things. I think it's really true that the only way you get good at dealing in a nonviolent way with conflict is when you're in conflict. And frankly, in my life, there's not a ton of conflict. And so I would like to think I'm somewhat prepared if a violent conflict situation arose, but I think probably I just wouldn't have enough practice to respond as well as I could. But maybe in that situation, if I ever am in that situation, Jesus will help me there too. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.